This is Tim O'Brien with O'Reilly News. Paul Venezia is a senior contributing editor with InfoWorld. He's been covering the Terry Childs case since July. Terry Childs has been sitting in jail for approximately 7 months. He's a network engineer for the city of San Francisco. What makes this case peculiar? Terry Childs never brought a single system down. He's accused of running a series of modems and preventing the normal operation of a network.
Yeah, I'm Paul Venezia, senior contributing editor with InfoWorld and technologist.
Okay, what sort of technology do you focus on? What's your...
I'm that rarest of breeds. I'm a generalist. I built large switched and routed networks for cities and hospitals and private corporations and so forth. I also am now lapsed RHCE, and I do a lot of Linux work, FreeBSD, Solaris, coding, you know, whatever happens to come my way.
Your column in InfoWorld about the Terry Childs case, and it's a really interesting case because it brings up a lot of issues about how technology workers are perceived in the general media. What in this case attracted your initial attention?
Initially, my editor sent me an email right after it happened with a link to the first story that I read, which I believe was in the Chronicle, the San Francisco Chronicle, and asked me what I thought and could I write up a little bit about it. And I read the reporting, and none of it seemed to make sense from a technical perspective. My investment in this case is nothing to do with Terry Childs himself. I don't even know the man. I met him briefly for the interview that I posted. But before that, and that was only a week or two ago, before that, I'd never met him, never heard of him. You know, I don't know him at all. However, what I was reading from a technical perspective and being someone that works in high-end internetworking, a lot of what was being described by the DA, by those that were talking to the media, didn't make any sense as relates to normal network operation and procedure. The more that came out, this was before he'd even given up the passwords and so on and so forth, and the stories that I was reading and the information that I was able to glean from the court records and so forth, it was sending up red flags all over the place when they were claiming things like, the now famous 1100 modems that they initially said Childs may have planted around the city, and a whole host of other things that just didn't jive. There was something missing from this story, and I wasn't sure what it was. As time has gone on, the statements that I made earlier in the case back in July and so forth seem to have been borne out, because a lot of the conjecture and the charges, allegations I should say, made against him seem to have disappeared. A lot of that, I believe, was on the fact that there just wasn't any technical evidence to support them. And as it's moved forward, I've just been going over the court records, the public documents as I can. I'm 3,000 miles away. I live on the other side of the country. So whatever information has been entered into the public record, I've been taking a look at and trying to figure out exactly what happened. That's been my only goal. If he did what they say he did, then perhaps there is a legitimate complaint here. But if that's going to be the case, if he is going to be convicted in a court of law for criminal offenses, there better be some sound technical reasoning and evidence behind it, and I have yet to see that.
The thing that struck me in the news story, as it was being reported by CNN and other mainstream news outlets, was I think that they called him a terrorist within the first week. What is he being charged with?
The allegations were all over the place at the beginning. They were charging him with sabotage, or they were saying that he was planning to commit sabotage and had planned to take down the network, and all of these other statements that were made to the press and so forth. Those have disappeared. The charges as they stand right now, there's one charge of basically a denial of service. So they're charging him with a means of which to deny the service normal operation of a computer resource or network or whatever. It's a kind of a vague, relatively vague charge, as are most charges and technical charges like this. You can't get too specific because then it becomes useless. But that's the main charge. That's the first one. And then there are three other charges, each of which are tied to a modem that was found either in his workspace or that he had control over. The first one is a modem that he claims, and he has been, I believe, has been backed up on this by others in the department, a modem hooked up to a machine running What's Up Gold that would send a message to his pager if any part of the network went down. That is a scenario that exists in one form or another, whether it be an analog modem or it's a text gateway, email gateway kind of thing. That exists in just about every network ever built. The next modem that they're charging him with operating and apparently for nefarious purposes was a DSL modem that was connected to an ISP that was used by the department to connect to the internet to run external tests against the network, test VPN connections and so forth. Again, something that is, you know, as common as crackers. And the third one is yet another modem, this time another analog modem, he claims was used to connect to the San Francisco's disaster recovery site. As I just wrote about in my column this week, the San Francisco, sitting on a fault line, has a disaster recovery site on the East Coast that I believe this modem was used to communicate with that site, assuming that data networks would be down, but the phone system may still be functioning. So that's the entirety of the case, is those four charges, as of right now.
Having an alternative means of getting into a system is a pretty common thing. Are we going to get to a world where if you're a system administrator, you have to call your lawyer first?
Well, you know, I hope not. I would hope that most managers wouldn't be so short-sighted as to not see the value in that. That's actually not what he's charged with, though. None of the modems that are listed on the complaint were actually used for remote access. I believe that there were modems that were used for remote access that he had. Again, like any large network, you know, if the network's down, you need to get to an endpoint that might be some number of miles away. You use a modem to get into the router. But, you know, it may be a situation where, you know, you do have to think twice. If he's convicted of this, especially the denial of service thing and withholding the passwords, and in this case, denial of service is being defined as the management of the network, not the network itself. So in my mind, a denial of service is something, a situation where somebody knowingly causes a resource to fail or go down, as in a denial of service against a website or something similar. In this case, the network never went down. There was just the management side of things. So as I wrote in that column, you know, that could be stretched to encompass things like a misconfiguration that locks people out of the management interface. That happens all the time, you know, where the human error, somebody fat fingers something and you get locked out of a router or locked out of a switch or whatnot. And at that point, does that constitute a denial of service or is that just a mistake? You know, so there seems to be an awful lot to worry about here. If he is convicted, if these charges are in fact brought and succeed, you know, it's not just his case that I'm thinking of. It's more broad than that. It just seems to me that there's an awful lot of he's a witch, burn him kind of sentiment going on here, because nobody from the city, none of the judges, nobody can be expected to understand this level of networking. You know, it's not feasible. It's not their job. And it's horrendously complex. You know, having been there and done it for many years, you know, it just, that's the way it is. And this lack of understanding, I mean, you go and ask somebody on the street, what is a modem? And you'll get several different answers. Some people will tell you, oh, it's, you know, it's my cable box that connects me to my internet, you know, or it's a DSL modem, or it's an analog modem. Even the definition of modem is kind of amorphous to the general public. So when you're talking about something as detailed as this, it kind of, it's very difficult to actually relate. And if he's convicted on these charges, that to me, to anybody that is history and networking are just, they're common. I mean, this is not, by any stretch, an uncommon scenario. Then, you know, where does that leave the thousands of networks that have modems on them, that have DSL connectivity to ISPs for external testing and so forth? I mean, where does that leave you?
It's entirely possible that he did have some sort of malicious intent, but I think we share the same reading of the case. This sounds more like a case of a very bad, very corporate boss manipulating the facts to make someone look worse than he actually was.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. If he worked for a private company and not a city government, almost no chance that he'd be in jail right now. I mean, for one thing, a private company wouldn't want the negative publicity. Also, if their primary complaint was the passwords, he wouldn't give up the passwords. There are civil procedures to follow to get those passwords. Just like if you wanted to evict somebody out of a rental property, for instance, you have to file a civil complaint and then you get the sheriffs behind you and you go and you do what needs to be done. That would have been the same procedure here, as I understand it. However, that wasn't done. He was just thrown into jail, primarily because he worked for the city, and the police department in the city are obviously connected. And so there was an awful lot of hoops that didn't have to be jumped through. He's been there for 7 months on that. It's also interesting to me that the reason he's in jail...
So wait. He's actually been in jail for 7 months.
Yeah, he's been in jail since July 12th, I think.
Anytime you see someone on CNN calling someone a terrorist, I'm a bit skeptical. It seems like that word is thrown around with abandon for all the wrong reasons. The one thing that struck me about this case was the depiction of someone who was a geek in the general media. I mean, I've worked with a lot of people, I'm sure you have too, who you would consider to be weird, strange, strong-willed, stubborn. Sometimes a stubborn network engineer is exactly the kind of person you want to have that job.
Well, again, you know, going back to what I said earlier about the lack of knowledge of this type of people, I mean, the computer geek is this kind of introverted, sullen, you know, it's depicted as your IT guy that, you know, is upset because you can't figure something out. And so he gets frustrated and just tells you to move and I'll fix it and so forth. And that's the public perception. And at this level of a network engineer, these are the kind of guys that, you know, sit in the back room and work their magic and nobody ever knows really who they are. You know, from the company at large, they're more or less the umpires of the company, right? Or in this case, the city. They're either invisible or in trouble. You know, that's just the way the public thinks about it, and that's generally fine. I mean, most geeks would, most people in that position actually would prefer that versus, you know, anything else. If they're doing their job, nobody knows, and that's essentially what's going what happened here. I mean, look, think of it this way: you mentioned terrorist and so forth. If in my mind, if a CCIE really wanted to wreak havoc on a network that he built and knew intimately, there are 1,000 ways that could be done without either A, ever being traced, or B, causing a significant amount of damage, none of which actually happened here. So we have a situation where the network never went down. There were never any problems with the network's normal operation, and yet he's still in jail. That, to me, doesn't fit the definition of a terrorist by any stretch of the imagination.
What did you think about the recent news story about Fannie Mae? There was somebody at Fannie Mae who had written some scripts to quote-unquote delete all the data. What was your first gut reaction to that story?
I don't think I really had one other than, well, it's a good thing they found it. You know, that's a whole different scenario. That is somebody writing scripts designed for the specific and only purpose of destroying data that was, you know, not prescribed by the his job is a saboteur. I mean, this has happened in the past. There have been, I can't recall the name of the company offhand, but there's a company I believe that went out of business when one of their main system administrators wrote some scripts that basically placed a logic bomb in the servers and deleted all their data on like a Saturday night with no backup. So those kind of things are, I think, greatly removed from this situation. For one thing, we're not talking about any data. We're not talking about anything being broken, anything being deleted or damaged in any way. So I don't think there's really a relation between the two at all.
All right. So because there's a script, there seems to be more evidence of intent there.
Absolutely. I mean, you sit down and you write a script that has its sole purpose is to run at a certain time and destroy data. You know, that right there is a weapon, right? Much the same way that a hammer could be used as a weapon if it's wielded the right way. In that case, it was wielded as a weapon. In the case of Terry Childs, there was no intent. There was no damage caused. And from everything that I've seen, there's no example that he ever intended there to be damage caused.
Do you know offhand if there's anything, any group that people that do what Terry Childs does can support, maybe donate to make sure that people like him receive due process in the courts?
Oh, I don't believe there's anything of the kind. This case is different from anything I've ever seen or heard of.
How can people stay up to date on this case in particular? Are you planning on doing some more coverage?
The wheels of justice turn slowly. We're 7 months in. I don't believe he's even pled yet. So he has a hearing this week that may result in something new. But other than that, all I'm doing is just taking the news reports and the events of the hearings and the trials and trying to make them, you know, a little more widely known. You get news stories that occasionally come around, and they're little bits of the case history and then, you know, the next hearing date or something like that. But the mainstream media hasn't really, you know, gotten into this at all, primarily because I don't think it would draw readers. You know, it's not a case that really resonates with your average person. it resonates with me. It should resonate with anybody that's involved in network design and construction and so forth. But beyond that, you know, I would think that if we're able to find somebody that knew who Terry Childs was, you know, like a layperson, their first, oh yeah, isn't that the guy that destroyed the city of San Francisco's network?
That isn't would probably that the, be their take on it. Isn't that the crazy terrorist?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the spin out there, because that's easily digested, you know, regardless of the facts of the case. That's what's easily digested.
That'll get hits. So if you are listening to this and you want to learn more about this case, go read Paul's column at infoworld.com. He seems to write every week or so. So thanks for talking to us, Paul.
Anytime.
This has been a production of O'Reilly Media. For more coverage of the case, you should read Paul Venezia's column at infoworld.com. The URL is weblog.infoworld.com/Venezia. That's VENEZIA.